Richard Kimmel. Cause I've been running so long. Yeah, they name me Richard Kimmel. Cause I've been running so long. Yeah, you know they got me accused of murder when I ain't did no one wrong.
All right, and we're back talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken on this final show of 2007. And tonight's program is going to be the worst of Season 2. Now, that would be Season 2 of The Fugitive, not Season 2 of Talkin' Fugitive. And in honor of that theme for tonight's show, that was why I selected that opening theme. Bob, don't you consider that one of the worst of 2007?
Absolutely, no doubt about it.
Okay. So, Bob, as long as you're off and running with an opinion, you take over.
Thank you, Dave. Today marks the end of not only our second year on the air, but also the end of Season 2. We spent a lot of time and a lot of effort in analyzing the good times and what made them good in this series. Now we need to face reality. The Fugitive was not always great or good or fair or even bearable. In fact, it often did not live up to its own standards. That's why, although many people call it the best TV drama ever, the three of us generally do not. Probably there is no such animal, because putting out 30 compelling scripts over about a 6 to 8 month schedule was a daunting task in the mid-60s, and it often shows. There are long stretches of episodes that make you scratch your head and wonder why they ever saw the light of day. Tonight, we are here not to answer why, but to simply acknowledge the very worst of the very best of Season 2. In the first half of the show, we will just make some short comments on them. And then in the second half, we will demonstrate just how bad you can be, and sometimes it turns out to be quite amusing. Now, The Fugitive in its second season gets off to an all-star beginning with Man in a Chariot. That's a very serious episode. We've talked about it here on our show. I remember reading, I don't know that it was in Ed Roberts' book, it may have been in the official fan's guide to The Fugitive, Alan Armour, the show's producer on a day-to-day basis, considered Man in a Chariot to be their crowning achievement. Now, I don't agree with that because I didn't find it that great an episode, neither did Ken. But most people considered it a classic, and it certainly is worthy. If they follow that up with World's End, which was the first appearance of Suzanne Pleshette and the second major Kimball love interest, most people do consider that a classic. And after that, you've got about 3 or 4 average episodes. Some are pretty good, some are a little less than average. Some are a little more than average. And then The Fugitive, as it did in Season 1, hits the skids. We get to a very unfortunate period of 3 in a row that are hard to sit through. And I think one of the problems here is not just that they do a bad show every now and then, because it's to be expected, but that they bunch them together. I never could understand that, why they don't spread the agony around a little bit. They put one and then another one and another one, and after a while, you begin to wonder why you're here. So we hit bad times with an episode called Tiger Left, Tiger Right, which features Leslie Nielsen for his second time in the series after he's just been in Season 1, breaking one of Ken's cardinal rules about not coming back in a different character. Also, his partner is Carol Rawson, making her first of what will be 5 appearances over a 4-year period. It's a lousy story. It's boring. They play 2 inept, idiotic kidnappers who are looking to kidnap a wealthy man and instead grab Kimball by mistake off the road. It's just horrible to sit through. They follow that up with Tug of War, which is about 2 lawmen in the West. It's kind of a Western-type fugitive, one young, one old, both vying for the right to come in with their prize, which is Richard Kimball. Long and boring. And then after that, they do Dark Corner with Tuesday Weld, the reigning sex kitten on TV and in the movies from the late 50s and early 60s. And they do absolutely nothing with her. She plays a blind sculptress with an evil secret to hide. And I don't know how you can have Tuesday Weld in there looking pretty good even at that point in her career and manage to still screw up the story anyway. But it's positively dreadful. Now, those are 3 in a row And ironically, they're followed by Escape in the Black, an all-time classic that we talked about the past couple of weeks. And I think that's how they got away with it. They could do really lousy stories, 2, 3, 4 in a row, and come up with something fabulous, and you would say, okay, I'll put up with it, because I know what's coming later on. Ken, this is a little bit infuriating, isn't it, to see all these in a row?
Yes. From the very beginning, in season one, I said, let's follow, you know, Richard Kimball episode from episode to episode, and that's why they wanted to have a fan base. You know, we sympathize with Kimball. You know, we're finding out where's Gerard, where's the one-armed man. So, develop a story. Now, in season two, or actually season one ended with the end game, and that was okay. I liked that one. And so we're looking forward over the summer. Here we get into season two. They start off with a mock trial. Okay, not the greatest. I agree with you, Man in the Chariot. But then I think they veered off a little bit and did not stick to the fugitive concept. And I agree. Tiger left. We already saw a kidnapping, actually a couple of them in season one. So don't tell us another kidnapping story. Give us something new. You know, the Dark Corner one with Tuesday Weld. You know, Kimbo's in the barn. He's fleeing the sheriff. And Tuesday Weld has these senses. And she befriends Kimball. And the story just went nowhere because you had a jealous sister. And here, we're the audience. And we're saying, come on, you know, we don't need family feuds. We're watching Richard Kimball. He's a fugitive. And, you know, stick with that. Don't get into these family dysfunctional, you know, concepts. So I agree with you there. And what was that other one you mentioned?
Those were the three there. After that, they did Escape in the Black. So I think that's how you get away with it. You've made the audience angry over three boring stories.
Right.
Then you see Escape in the Black, and you go, you know what? I'll go through the boring stories if I'm coming up to this. And they do that several times over the first three seasons of the show. But I just don't understand. I don't have any idea, neither do any of us, what their schedule was like, how far ahead they were of airing episodes, when scripts that were developed, what order they were done in. But it's just hard for me to believe. Somebody must have been in charge of putting these in order and saying, we're going to do this one, this one, this one, just like I do this show and figure out what we're going to talk about. And you don't want to put all the bad ones together. Or maybe that's a good idea. Maybe it's better to just get them all out of the way.
No, what they did wrong was they didn't continue the story. They veered off path.
Oh, sure, exactly.
And that's why we got the bad episodes.
Right. Every time they leave the basic premise, they run into trouble. Now, after this, we get Escape in the Black, and we get some other episodes that are pretty good. And then we get to another bad episode called The Cage. Kimball on a boat again. It wasn't agonizing enough that he was on this boat back in season one in Tickets to Alaska, and that was a horrible episode, at least for me. And now he's back on a boat again. He's involved with this girl played by Brenda Scott, who looks so young. She looks like she's about 12 years old, and he looks like a child molester in this. I mean, it's really creepy.
Actually, I disagree. I thought she looked too old to be playing somebody who was 15. I thought she looked like she was at least
20. I thought she looked younger than 15.
No, I thought she looked like she was at least 20, and I was shocked when they said, my daughter is only 15,
really?
And I was going, say what?
Well, I don't know. She looked pretty young to me.
No.
Now, after we get that horrible thing, we get one that everybody agrees is really dreadful. And that's Detour on a Road Going Nowhere.
Yeah, as I put
it,
it was Detour on a Road Literally Going Nowhere.
Yeah, that's gets Kimball on a bus with a bunch of losers, including that middle-aged man who's hitting on all the young women. And it's absolutely, I mean, you can't even sit through that.
Well, basically because the plot truly went nowhere. I got to the end of the story and I thought, what was the point? There was no point to it.
Do you remember a scene near the end of that where there's a woman sitting on the bus and she points a gun at Kimball as he's walking away from the bus?
Yes.
She's sitting in the seat, and I'm thinking to myself, is this supposed to be scary or what? I mean, all he's got to do is keep walking. You know she's not going to shoot him. It was just embarrassing. Sometimes David Jansen, you know, looked like he was embarrassed to be in certain episodes. and that was one of them. Detour, you're right, is a great title because it was an episode that absolutely went nowhere. Then after that, the fugitive commits a sin that is unforgivable, and that is to bring back Pat Hingle, who played Mike Decker in Search in a Windy City, and a character we hated at the beginning, who totally redeemed himself at the end, went to jail for Kimmel, saved his life. He comes back in season two in Nicest Fellow you'd ever want to meet.
I thought that episode was just dumb.
Playing a sadistic killer sheriff. Everybody hated this. It is sadistic. It is ugly. It is mean-spirited. And it's horrible to watch. Ken, this is really creepy, is it not?
The writer of the story began that story on such a sour note, too. Well, Kimball was jaywalking, right?
No,
yeah.
He was hitchhiking.
Yeah.
Hitchhiking or jaywalking, one of the two.
Right. He was hitchhiking, and hitchhiking wasn't allowed within the city limits.
Right, and the Pat Hingle character arrest him and said, "You're being charged." And then all of a sudden, the story develops where the sheriff is out to kill Kimball. And I said, please, I mean, you're really stretching this.
See, I got a question about this. Boy, I'll tell you, they played tough with hitchhikers back there in those days, apparently. Did Pat Hingle appear as different characters in the same season?
No.
Okay, so the Mike Decker wasn't from season two.
That was season one.
Okay, all right, thank you.
But he had totally redeemed himself. He started out as a terrible character who was only out for himself. He wanted to win the Pulitzer Prize.
Now, I was just wondering about them using the same actor with different characters in
But they did bring actors back over and over again, as Ken surely knows.
Okay.
So Nicest Fella is really grim and an awful thing to do to a much-beloved character. That was incredibly stupid. After that, they do a couple of episodes that are a complete mystery to me. One's called Scapegoat, which is an episode that runs backwards. It's not all in flashbacks. I don't remember much of it. I don't think I even wrote a review of it. It was just too awful. Absolutely disposable, a complete mystery to me. Then they do an episode called Masquerade, a case of mistaken identity. They think Kimball is some rich guy who's going to testify at a trial, and David Jansen gets stuck in a motel room with his wife, and all it is them talking to each other for an hour. It's dreadful. Then they go to Runner in the Dark, and here we go again with another Mike Decker thing. Now you got the lawyer from Man in the Chariot coming back, this time as a sadistic ex-lawman who's blind, here we go with the blind again, who's out to turn Kimmel in. Same thing, isn't it, Ken?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, the blind stories don't
Although
work.
I thought that one was a little more interesting.
Really?
I thought that was a little more interesting than Tug of War. I thought Tug of War looked like, to me, the episode Tug of War was a script that would have been better served on Gunsmoke. It had absolutely no business being on the fugitive.
Oh, that is. Oh, yeah.
All right, listen, we'll take a quick time out here because I'm sure you have one or two of these to talk about, and we will do so when we come back for the worst of season two, Talking Fugitive, here on Retro Radio.
This Christmas, give the gift that lasts all year. Tell your friends and family about KSAV and how to find us. Besides in-depth discussions of The Fugitive, KSAV offers great programming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The retro radio format plays the music of the 40s, 50s, and 60s, interspersed with old-time radio programs, retro commercials, and the memories of radio stations of the past. The fun and laughter of sidewalks of San Francisco, the nostalgia of Perfectly Frank, the guests and audience interaction of Talkin' Television with Dave White means there is definitely something for everyone. Giving the gift of KSAV means no hassles with parking, returns, or exchanges. One size fits all, and the best part of it is, it's free. KSAV, the enjoyment of Christmas Day every day of the year.
That KSAV sounds good. I'm going to listen to that. We're talking Fugitive, the worst of season two, with Kitty and Bobby and Ken. You know, they seem to, from what you folks say, blind people were popular as characters on this show, but I don't think that's a surprise considering all the one-armed men he seems to encounter
around the
country. All right, Bob, you go ahead again.
All righty. I just want to stop here because we always run out of time at the end to wish everybody a Merry Christmas to Kitty and to Ken and to you, Dave, and to all of our listeners. Have a happy holiday season and a very healthy and happy new year. We're almost up on Christmas, but there's actually an important date tomorrow. Tomorrow happens to be Kitty's birthday.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yes, it's Kitty's birthday tomorrow, and with this landmark birthday, she's finally going to be old enough to stay up late and listen to our show. So, happy birthday to Kitty.
Thank you.
The Fugitive Views and Reviews, our three books are currently on sale at various internet booksellers, just in time for Christmas, of course. You can find them at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and several others. You don't want to miss out on that. And we've been so good this year that Dave's present to us is that he's giving us an extra week off. Oh, it's wonderful.
No pay, though.
An extra week off. We won't be back until January the 15th. And when we do, we will start Season 3, which most people agree is the best of all of the seasons. We've done some of the shows already on here, but we still have other classics to go. And Season 3 will begin with Richard Kimmel being taken right back to prison. That's right, he's going back to jail. Do not pass go, do not collect $200, Richard Kimmel. Just go back to prison. And he does. Begin Season 3 with Wings of an Angel, January 15th. That's 4 weeks from tonight. In the meantime, we're still thinking about the bad of last season, and then we're going to forget about them forever. After the ones that I've mentioned so far, we have another terrible episode called The Old Man Picked the Lemon. What a ridiculous title. I don't know whether that's more ridiculous than Detour on a Road Goes Nowhere, but they must have had fun just picking these titles out. This is a really tedious, meaningless episode. It has nothing to do with Richard Kimmel.
I called it A Man Bites a Lemon.
That's right. Well, you know, they couldn't even make lemonade out of this. That's how bad it was. All about a woman running some sort of lemon plantation or something, and her evil son trying to drive her out of business so he can just steal her money. It's awful. Just terrible. But if you think all of those were bad, you haven't seen anything yet. Because to make this worse, to end the season, what a terrible thing to do. The last episode of the season is one of Ken's all-time favorites. It's called Last Second of a Big Dream. Ken, tell us about it.
It's probably number three on the all-time worst. I have, there's an episode in season four, we'll get to that, you know, the one with the one-armed man. We just
reviewed
it. Yeah,
but let's stick to season three, Ken.
Yeah. And then the Storm Center from season one was pretty bad. But this,
right. Season three,
Ken. Last Second of a Big Dream, we have some kind of a circus atmosphere. We've got tigers. We've got this owner who's trying to make some money, and he comes up with the brilliant idea of putting Richard Kimball in a tiger cage. And we have the guy who maintains the tigers. He has a dilemma whether to release a tiger or to release Kimball. And you have this this owner of the park. He's going to try to make some money by showcasing Richard Kimball in a cage.
No, that's not what happened.
isn't that the concept I got?
What it was that he put Richard Kimball in the cage so that the police would come and arrest him when everybody was showing up for the show, and then he'd get all this publicity that they arrested Richard Kimball at his place. He wasn't going to put Richard Kimball on display. He just knocked him out and threw him in the cage so that he'd be there when the police got there with Gerard.
Kitty's right about that. And you know what? I make the same mistake that you just made. I often think that's really what he's up to, that he simply wants to sell tickets to see Kimball. But, of course, that wouldn't work because Gerard's not going to hear about that. Kimball's going to be the case. He's not going to be telling people, hey, let me out of here. I'm not Richard Kimball. I mean, that would never work. So Kitty's right. What he wants to do is have him caught there so he can say, well, come here. And now, the problem with this is just stupid. Who's going to give money to buy tickets for that? I don't care. I don't care that Richard Kimball got caught there. What does that mean? So it's all over with, and you have to pay him money to go there and see the actual cage where this terrible criminal that half the country doesn't even know about got caught. It was an,
and really, the worst part, for me, the worst part about that episode was the tiger getting murdered by Gerard.
Yeah.
I mean, that was completely uncalled for, and this owner of the place was such an idiot. I mean, he was getting ready to sell that tiger for $10,000, and you would think any owner worth his salt would have been screaming at the police, "You let me get my tranquilizer guns. You're not going to shoot my tiger with bullets."
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, the guy who lets the tiger loose in the end, he doesn't get arrested for helping Kimball. He doesn't even get arrested for endangering the public by letting a tiger loose.
Well, according to Ken's review, what really upset him is that he had to give this, I believe, a 1 rating, even though Gerard was in it.
Yeah, that's the lowest rating I've given to a story that involved Lieutenant Gerard. And I
But what was the dumb stuff? So far, it really sounds interesting.
It was just a dumb concept. The guy thought that if Richard Kimball was arrested at his place, that would make people want to come to his park.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, because he brings up about how a famous gangster was arrested at some theater in Chicago, and so for years afterwards, people went to that particular theater just to see where it was that whoever it was arrested. I can't remember.
Okay, this is all very nice, but you're all overlooking the worst thing of all. It ends the season. It's
right.
The season-ending episode. This is what you're going to go with. This is the end of the second season, and I'm a fan, and I'm sitting there, I've got to get through the whole summer now with nothing but reruns. This is the one I'm going to remember. You've got to be kidding me. I mean, that's the worst thing about what they do. Everybody does bad episodes. You can't help that. Bury them somewhere in the middle. Put them on around holidays or somewhere. Nobody's watching TV. Please don't end the season this way. Don't end the season on an idiotic story like this. It is an embarrassment. Speaking of embarrassing, however, much earlier in season two comes an episode that deserves a little bit more comment than we've been given to these, and that's called Fun and Games and Party Favors. What a wonderful idea for a story. Kimball's working for some rich family. I don't know what he is. He's a chauffeur. Is that what he is?
Yes,
and
he's
a chauffeur.
And
he comes across this hot little couple. They just can't keep their hands off of each other. Oh, my God. This dippy little blonde and her boyfriend. And Kimball finds out that they're planning to elope. He's planning to go to medical school, but they're planning to elope. And for reasons that escape me, this means the world to Kimball. He just agonizing is over this, doesn't he, Kitty?
Well, yeah, you know, and I'm just sitting here watching this episode thinking to myself, I'm sorry, but this is one of the rare instances where I really think Kimball overstepped his bounds. He should have just minded his own business. These two young people wanted to get married. That's hardly a crime. I mean, the way he was acting, you were thinking they were going to go rob a bank, go to Mexico, and set up some kind of a brothel, the way he was acting. I mean, he was calling them animals, and he was insisting that they were going to have a baby right off the bat, and she said, "No, we're not going to have a kid." "Oh, well, you say that now." And I'm like, wait a minute, Kimball, who are you to make a comment on these people's sex life?
And when I saw that, I had a glimmer of hope for a minute. I thought to myself, well, there's got to be a reason for this. Oh, I see what the reason is. We don't know this yet. We don't find out until the survivors, which is 4 episodes after this, anything about the Kimball marriage, when he met her, and all of that. So at this point, we know nothing. And we whine about that incessantly. And here's a chance to see their marriage. Maybe, just maybe, this was an issue for Richard Kimball and his relationship with Helen. Maybe he did put off medical school for a while. Maybe they didn't do exactly what he had planned to do. Maybe they got married too early.
Which, of course, that didn't happen when we got to the survivors.
And yes, but this is before then.
Right.
This is before the survivors. So they hadn't done anything yet. They could have created a story right here. And here's a perfect opportunity to see why Helen went off the rails when that baby was stillborn back at the beginning. And there's a whole story there that they could have taken out everything out of this episode, stopped it right there, hit a flashback at that point where he's talking to them, and that's it.
Do a story where he had, where his roommate, you know, got married too early and it was a disaster for him going to med school and being married.
The rest of this story is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. You know, she threw, there's thrown a party, and you've got all the, first of all, everybody, it's hard to tell what these kids are. They're not really kids. They're all adults. Obviously, they're all in their early 20s or later. They're certainly not teenagers. They're not high school students. And they hired every extra they could find in Hollywood to attend this party. And the minute they walk in the door, the rock and roll music comes on, and they start dancing. One girl jumps up on a table, kicks everything off, takes her shoes off, starts gyrating. Another kid throws something.
It really almost looks like they all ought to be on American Bandstand.
They start breaking furniture, and this is so out of place. It's the mid-60s, not the mid-50s. And so it's got a 10-year-old mentality. Back in the mid-50s when rock and roll first came around, every parent was convinced it would be the end of civilization. It was just horrible. You can understand that then. But it's the mid-60s. We're on the eve of the Vietnam War and hippies and all, you know, it's ridiculous to show this story. It's like 1965. It doesn't even belong in the show. I don't know who wrote it or what he was thinking, but he was way, way out of date, and it just looked completely idiotic. Now, I think, Ken, you mentioned in your review about the bad acting, and you know the girl, I can't remember her name right now, who played the
Catherine Crawford.
Right, she is the daughter of Roy Huggins, who created the show. A slight case of nepotism. He put his own daughter in this story, and she couldn't act at all.
Oh, she was just like Pamela Tiffin from that little girl from Little
East. Yeah, but at least Pamela Tiffin did a few things back in those days. This girl could not act at all. You can go to IMDb where you'll find out that she never did anything again.
How about Mark Goddard? Was that his name? The lead?
Oh, Mark Goddard. He was on Lost in Space.
Yeah, he was a Lost in Space character. You know what? He's a pretty good actor. But he was a Dumbo. And you know what? Kimball was a Dumbo, too, because the whole party got out of control. You know, I was going to call this episode Beach Blanket Bingo. Remember that? With Frankie Avalon?
Oh, Beach Blanket Bingo is much better than this.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he does. There are times that right in the middle of the story where David Jansen is standing there, and you just know by looking at him that he's embarrassed to be here. He looks like, I wrote in my review, he looks like he's waiting for a script. Can somebody get this man a script? He's got nothing to say. He's got nothing to do. It's just plain embarrassing.
Well, and you know, and the thing about it that got me is that, you know, supposedly Kimball always makes a difference in somebody's life, you know, and he was telling them not to get married. But you know what? That didn't change. At the end of the episode, the Mark Goddard character is telling Catherine Crawford character's parents that they're going to get married. I mean, after he decided, no, I'm not going to elope, but now he's decided they will get married, you know, and it's going to be sooner rather than later. So you're just like, well, what was the point? You know, it's like, why didn't you just go off and elope like you initially planned, you idiot? Quite frankly, I don't even see why the woman wants to marry him at this point, because some guys tried to sexually assault her, and he goes in, and is he the slightest bit angry at the guys who tried to attack the woman he loves? No, he's mad at her!
I'm just like,
excuse me, this woman ought to be throwing him out of the house!
I don't know how a story like this gets through. That's what really bothers me.
Yeah.
Did anybody notice it, or did they just stand there and go, look, we need a story for next week. That's all I know. It's already written. We'll just do it. Because you would think there'd be quality control, and somebody would look at it and go, this is the biggest piece of crap I've ever seen in my entire life. There's no way we can do a story like this.
All right. We've got to call it to a halt here, I think, especially before Kitty has to go take her blood pressure medication anyway. We're going to be back on January the 15th, folks, starting a new season, season 3. I hope everybody has a happy holiday and a happy new year. You three, I appreciate your efforts and a good job here as usual. So you enjoy yourselves, and I will be back here with you January the 15th. We'll do it all again, talking Fugitive on Sherevision Radio.
Yeah. You know, a man can't help but feel bad when he's always on the run. Feel bad
to run. You know it make it feel so bad when it ain't a thing he have done.